from deep inside your radio.
Well, ladies and gentlemen, we have the case coming to the Senate for a vote probably this week of John Bolton to be our, I'm busting my buttons just thinking about it, our ambassador to the United Nations. Because we need a tough guy there to push for the reform of the, what was it? What is he going to reform again? They didn't say. That's what it was. Meanwhile, the Associated Press reports, Bolton flew to Europe in 2002 to confront the head of a global arms control agency. Bolton's job was Undersecretary of State for Arms Control, Nuclear Proliferation Issues, to demand that that head of the global arms control agency resign. Then he orchestrated the firing of the diplomat in a move that a UN tribunal, UN, has since judged unlawful. Well, he says there's no UN. Why should he follow their stinking rules? A former deputy of Bolton says he felt Jose Bustani, the head of the Chemical Weapons Organization for the Prohibition of Chemical Weapons Agency, had to go because Bustani, a Brazilian, was trying to send chemical weapons inspectors to Baghdad in 2002. That might have helped defuse the crisis over alleged Iraqi weapons and undermined the rationale for war, you see, ladies and gentlemen. Bustani says he got a menacing phone call from Bolton at one point. He was removed by a vote of just one-third of member nations at an unusual special session of the OPCW, at which the United States cited alleged mismanagement in calling for his ouster. This is an Associated Press story. I'm sure you've read about it or heard about it on your TV or radio. The United Nations' highest administrative tribunal later condemned the dismissal of Bustani as, quote, an unacceptable violation of principles protecting international civil servants. The OPCW's Swiss chairman now calls it an unfortunate precedent. Many believed the U.S. delegation didn't want meddling from outside in the Iraq business, says the retired Swiss diplomat. That could be the case, he adds. Outside, meaning outside Iraq and us, because we're inside Iraq now, ladies and gentlemen. We know that. Meantime, as they say in the news, former U.S. Defense Secretary Bob McNamara goes public in Britain about the failure of the initiative to strengthen nuclear nonproliferation, calling it an absolute disaster, warning that we're $1 billion short of what we need to lock up the loose Russian nukes. A disaster, the recent meeting to try to strengthen prohibitions against other nations going nuclear. Because, McNamara says, of objections from two nations. It's the only reason that this conference was an absolute disaster in McNamara's opinion. Obstruction from two nations, Iran and the United States. Nuclear nonproliferation, ladies and gentlemen. The portfolio of your ambassador and mine coming up, John Bolton. Hello, welcome to the show.
A common theme of love. keep your secrets. I want to fly on the higher trapeze. I get dizzy off my knees. Hope there's a dove waiting to fly with me. Cause I know that shell's no place for me to be. Sometimes, stranger to a kiss. Small bouquet to give you, full of daydreams and cliches to please you. I'm such a novice at this. Forgive me, forgive me. Sometimes, stranger to a kiss. Sometimes, delirious.
From the edge of America, from back at the home of the homeless, ladies and gentlemen, where it really belongs, don't you think? Well, unless it's somewhere else, in which case it belongs there. I'm Harry Shearer, welcoming you to this edition of the show. And first of all, some reassuring news. Significant gaps in security at the nation's airports, according to the New York Times over the weekend, could be curtailed even now, when there's rising passenger traffic at the airports, by quickly making a wide range of relatively modest changes in screening people and bags. This according to a confidential report by the Department of Homeland Security. One of the measures in this confidential report, ladies and gentlemen, setting up longer tables. You know those tables where you put your personal effects into the bins? Because people are often backed up waiting to unload items, investigators found the X-ray machines that examine carry-on baggage sit idle for as much as 30% of the time. So, ripped from this confidential report, a recommendation for longer tables, ladies and gentlemen. Just some longer bleeding tables. Pardon me. Now, if you wonder what it takes to figure out what's wrong with local news, how about being locked up in your house? This is from the Providence, Rhode Island, Phoenix. After spending a good part of his career reporting on criminals, Channel 10 investigative reporter Jim Taracani found himself on the other side of the divide when he was convicted of criminal contempt last November. It was because of his unwillingness to identify the source of an FBI videotape showing a top aide to the then-mayor Vincent Buddy Cianci. Why wouldn't you trust a mayor whose nickname is Buddy? Accepting a $1,000 bribe from a government informant at City Hall, the TV station broadcast the tape in 2001. The videotape violated a court ban against the distribution of such material. Taracani faced a possible prison sentence, and he refused to reveal his source. He was sentenced, since he's a heart transplant patient with heart transplant recipient with particular health needs, to 6 months of confinement at his home. The sentence ended at the beginning of April after he sought early termination of the sentence, that is. Question from the newspaper. Did going through a period of confinement change the way you look at your job of being a journalist? Remember, he's in TV news. Answer. What it made me think about a lot was, in broadcast news and print, we need to gain the public's trust back. The TV that I did watch. So I looked at some of the news that we do. It's what everybody does. We don't do anything any differently than any other TV station. But I think part of the problem that we've lost some of the respect to the public is that we do too much of the so-called sensational news of the car accidents and the minor house fires and the minor police actions. And I understand why we do them. But I think that if we got to do more serious, issue-oriented news, I don't know. I don't know if the audience would accept it. But I think we might gain back some of the respect. And I think that goes along with when reporters get in these situations where they're talking about protecting sources. If you want to have the public sympathize with you and empathize with you, they need to respect you first. I thought a lot about what we're doing in the business. I had tons of time to think. And that way, I don't know if it changed me. It certainly made me more aware of what we're doing and where I think we could improve. Question, what would it take to bring a change to the more issue-oriented reporting you're talking about? Answer, I think two big things. One is for the industry as a whole to say, look, we're going to do more of this serious news. But then it takes, the other half of that equation is the public. Because, as you probably know, all of us in the commercial news business, we do research to find out what the public wants to see. And usually what you see in a newscast is what they want to see, because when we try other things, the ratings start to go down. The public's a little bit at fault for perhaps being lazy. You could ask most people in the public, they could probably tell you an awful lot about American Idol. Ask that same person something about the selection of judges going on in Congress, and they'd probably look at you cross-eyed. The public needs to demand better news, and we need to give better news. Just 6 months in home confinement brought him to those conclusions, ladies and gentlemen. Jim Taracani. Of course, he'll be back in the newsroom helping, being part of the, But anyway, maybe just lock them all up for 6 months. Forget about the public. We got our own problems. We got to figure out who's going to win American Idol. But lock those guys. It worked for him. Why wouldn't it work for the rest of them? Ladies and gentlemen, don't get scared. No, sorry, get scared. A new study finds 125 large lakes in the Arctic have vanished as temperatures rose over the past two decades. Many other lakes have shrunk. Well, I'd take those back. The salesperson said these are the lakes once sat atop permanently frozen soil called permafrost. Other studies have shown permafrost is melting around the world, same place this show is heard, causing low-lying ground to slump and rock to fall from mountains, said Lawrence Smith of UCLA. Hey, go Bruin. We think that climate warming is thawing the permafrost. It's like pulling the plug out of a bathtub. There's nothing to prevent lake water from percolating through the soil to the aquifers below. Changes seem to come abruptly, said the researcher. From what we can tell from space, a lake is either just fine or it's gone. The sudden draining could alter entire continental ecosystems affecting birds. Birds, excuse me. Out of my way. And other wildlife that depend on the waterways. Migratory birds count on the lakes during summer to feed their young. I say let the young feed themselves, you know. Say that about people and birds. I know it's tough. It's a tough world. How tough? We apparently did mishandle the Quran, you see. We gave Newsweek crap, the government gave Newsweek crap for their report about mishandling the Koran for a couple weeks, and then late Friday afternoon, the Pentagon issued, late Friday afternoon, isn't that when it's hardest to get news noticed? Yes, it is. Pentagon issued confirmation. New details about mishandling the Koran, confirming that a soldier deliberately kicked the Muslim holy book, and an interrogator stepped on a Koran and was later fired for a pattern of unacceptable behavior. Another confirmed incident, a guard's, this is my favorite. It's disgusting, but it's also, it's got a kind of Rube Goldberg kind of, it goes in here and it comes out there and there's quality to it. A guard's urine came through an air vent and splashed on a detainee in his Koran. Water balloons thrown by prison guards also caused unspecified number of Korans to get wet. You don't want wet Korans. That's what I hear. And in a confirmed but ambiguous case, a two-word obscenity, they mean profanity, but they say obscenity because they don't know the difference, was written in English on the inside cover of a Koran. The findings were released after normal business hours on Friday. The results of an investigation by Brigadier General Jay Hood. That's what they put on the prisoners, isn't it? A Jay Hood? He's the commander of the detention center in Cuba. Oh, I see. He investigated himself. What a good idea. Good work, Jay. Hood said in a written statement released Friday evening that his investigation revealed a consistent, documented policy of respectful handling of the Koran, dating back almost 2.5 years. A spokesman for Rumsfeld did not address the confirmed mishandling of the Muslim holy book. Few other neat details. 15 cases of detainees mishandling their own Korans. These including using the Koran as a pillow and attempting to flush a Koran down the toilet. Man, I don't understand why the toilets don't rise up. Well, something like that. Oh, speaking of which, this relates to the report by Amnesty International analogizing the United States' treatment of detainees at Guantanamo and at other prisons around the world and at our subcontractors where we do extraordinary rendition of certain detainees. Amnesty International analogized this chain of detention centers to the Russian gulags. And the administration unleashed a withering barrage of criticism of Amnesty in response. Dick Cheney, Don Rumsfeld, and at a press conference, yeah, he's having those now, President George W. Bush.
Mr. President, recently Amnesty International said you have established, quote, a new gulag of prisons around the world beyond the reach of the law and decency. I'd like your reaction to that and also your assessment of how it came to this, that is a view not just held by extremists and anti-Americans, but by groups that have allied themselves with the United States government in the past, and what the strategic impact is that in many places of the world, the United States these days under your leadership is no longer seen as the good guy.
Yeah. I'm aware of the Amnesty International report, and it's absurd. It's an absurd allegation. The United States is a country that is promotes freedom around the world. When there's accusations made about certain actions by our people, they're fully investigated in a transparent way. It's just an absurd allegation. In terms of the detainees, we've had thousands of people detained. We've investigated every single complaint against the detainees. It seemed like to me they based some of their decisions on the word of and the allegations by people who were held in detention, people who hate America, people that have been trained in some instances to disassemble. That means not tell the truth. And so it was an absurd report.
Disassemble means not tell the truth, ladies and gentlemen. That was the part that didn't get noticed when people played that clip. They just went by it. He bothered to explain what disassemble meant. That's what I appreciated. at the bottom of the Washington Post story about the revelation that there had been U.S. mishandling of the Quran, Rumsfeld called the amnesty gulag analogy reprehensible. And then way, way, way down to the bottom of the story, the final line. However, Rumsfeld also acknowledged that some detainees had been mistreated, even, his word, grievously at times. Some temporary grievous mishandling for your detainee pleasure. Wouldn't that be an important point to make somewhere along the line that Rumsfeld says detainees have been treated grievously? Grievously. That's not good, is it? Grievously? I'll have to ask after I finish checking what disassemble really means. More news from outside the bubble. Operations by U.S. and multinational forces and Iraqi police are killing twice as many Iraqis, mostly civilians, as attacks by insurgents. This, according to statistics compiled by the Iraqi Health Ministry. Most of the dead are believed to be civilians. The data include an unknown number of police and Iraqi National Guardsmen. Many Iraqi deaths are never reported, so the actual number could be higher. The official said the statistics prove U.S. airstrikes intended for insurgents were also killing large numbers of innocent civilians. Some say, according to the Knight Ridder newspapers, some say these casualties are undermining popular acceptance of the American-backed interim government. Some say. That suggests that more aggressive U.S. military operations being planned to clear the way for nationwide elections next January could backfire and strengthen the insurgency. American military officials said, quote, damage will happen in their effort to wrest control of some areas for the insurgents. They blame the insurgents for embedding themselves in communities. Weren't we just told that it's not ethical to sacrifice one life to save another? In the stem cell debate, I know it's a different ethical universe. This is a story that has been widely ignored since it was printed a week ago in the Times of London, owned by Rupert Murdoch. The Royal Air Force and U.S. aircraft doubled the rate at which they were dropping bombs on Iraq in 2002 in an attempt to provoke Saddam Hussein into giving allies an excuse for war. The attacks were intensified starting in May, 6 months before the U.N. resolution that the British government argued gave the coalition the legal basis of war. By the end of August, the raids had become a full air offensive. The Allies dropped twice as many bombs in Iraq in the second half of 2002 as they did during the whole of 2001. The Brits increased even more than the Americans. Not picked up very much traction in the American media. We got other fish to fry. We got that serious news that guy from the home thing. What was his name? We forget, don't we? Ladies and gentlemen, the Osama bin Laden cigarette lighter is adorned with his raised chrome portrait, an embossed 9/11, sketches of the New York World Trade Center, an approaching airplane, and a big red splotch. When you flick the sleek metal lighter open, a light-emitting diode illuminates the splotch so it glows bright red on one of the buildings, emphasizing the site of the first crash. Loud computerized music beeps out of a loop of Mozart. Made in China, as are many of the latest gimmicky Osama bin Laden souvenirs. Hey, Chinese are our friends, white. The butane lighter recently showed up in Cambodia, where a Canadian traveler paid two US dollars for it. One man's catastrophe, he said, is another man's cheesy souvenir. The lighter came boxed with a gold and black cigarette holder. In a crammed middle-class shopping mall in Bangkok, this according to the Asia Times, other bin Laden souvenirs are also currently on sale. A Thai shop selling lava lamps, magic tricks, and embarrassing gifts to surprise recipients also offers a small, inexpensive hand puppet of bin Laden wearing boxing gloves. In Bangkok, street market stalls sell droopy, rubbery Bin Laden masks. The souvenirs appear to be made not by bin Laden supporters, but by profit-seeking factories that have slapped bin Laden's face and symbols of the war onto existing generic toys. Capitalism wins. And finally, at the top of the news, faced with a long, tough war in Iraq, the U.S. Army has struggled mightily with recruiting. Now the service is battling to keep the new soldiers it has brought into the force. More of the new Army recruits are washing out of the service before completing their first enlistment. One recent memorandum from a senior Army personnel official branded the problem a matter of great concern. The Army's answer, figure out a way to keep more of the soldiers who now are being forced out in. To keep more soldiers in the service, the Army has told commanders they can no longer bounce soldiers for poor fitness, pregnancy, alcohol and drug abuse, or unsatisfactory performance. You know, those are people we want. The Army is also ramping up its recruitment efforts by sponsoring NASCAR, because the Army says, that's our demographic. Young and dumb? No! Young and... guys who like to watch things go around, machines go around in circles. And all of this, and you know, ladies and gentlemen, I'm the kind of person who'd rather seek a solution than just bitch about the problem. The Army's got a recruiting problem. Many of the nation's cities have youth gang problems. Youth gangs are guys that like to dress up in uniforms and run around with guns. Army needs guys who they can dress up in uniforms and give guns to. Seems natural to me. And now, the apologies of the week.
We're so sorry.
Quote, the identity of Deep Throat has been revealed by Bob Woodward as Mark Felt. I and the students in my class at the University of Illinois at Urbana-Champaign were in error to have concluded otherwise. It was a learning experience for all of us. I apologize that our project misidentified Fred Fielding as the most likely candidate for Deep Throat. Signed, Professor William Gaines. Not the former publisher of Mad Magazine, I hope. The former San Joaquin County Sheriff here in California has been sentenced to 6 months in federal prison. Baxter Dunn pleaded guilty to one count of mail fraud. He was connected to a scheme to use his influence to help a company build a power plant in Stockton nearby. He apologized to the public after the sentencing. It was a judgment that at the time, I didn't recognize the full importance of. It was certainly never my intent to betray the public trust in any way. Especially the way that makes you go to jail. That's the way I really didn't. Dateline Atlanta, an associate managing editor of a small Georgia newspaper, has been fired for plagiarizing 6 to 8 articles written by a Pulitzer Prize-winning columnist for the Miami Herald. Chris Cecil, who worked at the Daily Tribune News of Cartersville, Georgia, for less than a year, was fired after columns he'd written since March were revealed to contain passages from earlier columns written by Leonard Pitts Jr., including a column Pitts wrote referring to his mother dying of cancer. Cecil apologized for his actions in an interview with the Associated Press, but he blamed a mentor. He asked the mentor to review his columns before publishing them. He said a mentor, a friend who doesn't work for the newspaper, whom he would not identify, edited his columns, advised him on the content, and sometimes added material to the columns. Cecil said, I never dreamed plagiarism was taking place. I have no choice but to face full responsibility because my name was on the columns. But, in fact, he blamed his mentor for the plagiarism, you see. A Pentecostal minister and former insurance agent told supporters to forget about him Friday after being sentenced to 10 years in prison for scamming policyholders devastated by last year's hurricanes. Nobody see me. Just go and live your lives, said Jason Matthew Ford, who owned a franchise of Great Florida Insurance in Wauchula, Florida. Was sentenced to 20 years probation for collecting money from clients on non-existent or expired policies and abandoning them after the hurricane season. I did not intend to harm anyone, he said, struggling to hold back tears. He apologized for what he called business mistakes. That's all I've got to say. I'm sorry. U.S.-bound passenger plane diverted Friday morning to Halifax International Airport in Canada because it sent out a false hijacking alarm. Returned to the air in the afternoon. It was a Virgin Atlantic flight. The airline issued a statement saying the technical issues involved in the false alarm were resolved. It apologized for any upset or inconvenience to the passengers. Marking the largest settlement yet in the Roman Catholic Church's sexual abuse crisis, the Covington, Kentucky diocese said Friday it had agreed to pay as much as $120 million to alleged victims of child molestation. The announcement came after more than a year of negotiations filing a class action suit. Said the Most Reverend Roger Foyes, "After personally meeting with more than 70 victims, I am painfully aware that no amount of money can compensate for the harm these victims suffered as innocent children." He apologized to those who reported abuse and were not treated with respect and courtesy when they came forth. In response to anger over some unfortunate statements in the Istanbul City Guide that it distributed for a football final championship, MasterCard Europe sent a letter of apology to the Turkish Ministry of Culture and Tourism. Alexander Labak of MasterCard revealed that the guide, which was distributed to a limited number of guests who came to Istanbul to attend the match, caused many complaints. He went on to express MasterCard's deep regret and apologize for the derisive content in the guide. MasterCard was responsible for promoting the game and its host country, Turkey. Also in the sports apology department, the city of Chicago had a Memorial Day marathon. Runners ran 27.2 miles instead of the standard 26.2. The long layout, as well as problems such as missing mile markers and unstaffed aid stations, led some runners to urge the city to stop issuing permits for the marathon until it's under new management. Race founder and organizer Mark Sylar issued an apology. "Last-minute changes caused us to miscalculate, and we foolishly added an extra mile. How terrible!" exclamation point, he wrote in a memo on his website. Dateline Canberra, Australia. Indonesia's embassy in Australia was closed after a package containing what authorities described as a biological agent — that's the guy who tries to get me work — was delivered there. Officials linked the incident to outrage over the conviction in Bali of Chappelle Corby on charges of importing some marijuana. Australian Prime Minister John Howard apologized to Indonesia for the incident. The agent was a powder sent in an envelope addressed to the Indonesian ambassador. It was later found to be benign, unlike the Australian president. Wachovia, the nation's fourth largest bank, has asked African Americans to forgive the company for its history of owning slaves and using them as loan collateral. "We apologize to all Americans and especially to African Americans and people of African descent," said Wachovia chairman. This is the activities of its predecessor bank and their officers, including such prominent Philadelphians as Revolutionary War financier Robert Morris. This was under pressure from the cities of L.A., Chicago, and Philadelphia, which have passed laws calling on city contractors to disclose any history of making money from slavery. Turkey got another apology this week from Syria, following an unintentional incident that led to an aerial explosion over the village, villages that I can't pronounce, in the southeastern province of Hatay. Syrian ambassador was asked to provide an explanation. Syria said the incident occurred due to a technical fault during military training exercises and expressed the government's regret over an unintentional incident caused by individual error and apologized to the Turkish government. Syrian authorities were taking steps to avoid repetition. And hardware maker Dell has publicly apologized to Chinese hardware maker Lenovo after one of its salesmen was caught running around claiming the hardware maker had been backing the Chinese government and funding the rise of communism. Dell says it will take disciplinary action against a U.S.-based salesperson who sent the email discouraging former IBM clients from buying products by Lenovo, which has bought IBM. The apologies of the week, ladies and gentlemen. It is a copyrighted feature of this broadcast. Now, we know the whole Deep Throat story. We think we do. G. Gordon Liddy was on Fox's Sunday Yak Show trying to say we don't know the whole story because we don't know the story about the fact that the Watergate break-in was deal with a call girl ring, at which point Chris Wallace interrupted him and said, "We're not going to talk about that." And Liddy said, "Yes, we are," and they didn't. So we either do or we don't. But we know who Deep Throat supposedly is now. It's Mark Felt, W. Mark Felt, former number two man in J. Edgar Hoover's FBI, involved in his own, actually convicted and pardoned by Ronald Reagan for his own break-ins to suspected Weather Underground activists. White House officials suspected felt was leaking as early as October 1972. Haldeman and Dean were speculating about Felt during one of the White House tapes. Is he Catholic? Nixon asked about Felt. Told by Haldeman that Felt was Jewish, Nixon replied, expletive. The FBI put a Jew in there? To which Haldeman responded, well, that could explain it. In fact, Felt is not Jewish. On February 28, 1973, Nixon and Dean again fingered Felt as the potential leaker. But Nixon was skeptical no one would risk his career to become an informant. That's from the tapes of 32 years ago, ladies and gentlemen. But as you know, this program has unimpeachable sources. Well, no, they almost got impeached. Sources for tapes currently being made by Nixon in heaven.
Bob Haldeman, that's exactly a car.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. Sorry. There was a problem with double parking on the other side of our cloud.
Yeah.
And
you see, that's the kind of job you shouldn't be wasting your time on, Bob.
Yeah.
See, that's what the Cubans are for.
Yeah. The Cubans are still alive.
Yeah.
Most of them.
Yeah.
Ones that aren't, we couldn't quite pull the strings to.
No, I know.
I mean, we tried our.
No, of course. So-called angels who run this place just love to put on a big show of equality and fairness and all the rest.
Yeah.
But, try to get one patriotic Cuban through the door despite some mud splattered on him by the elite media crowd. And,
he didn't do that well in his entrance interview anyway.
Well, screw him. Yeah, that's not what I wanted to talk to you about.
Yeah.
Sit down, Haldeman.
I am sitting down, sir. It's just in this robe. It's sometimes hard to.
It's Felt. It's Felt.
Yeah. Actually, it's Terry, but it has a softer hand than.
Goddamn deep throat is Felt!
Well, I'm sure it's Felt. The girl who did the movie said it was extremely uncomfortable.
One word's deep throat. It was Felt.
Mm-hmm. Mm.
Mark Felt.
Yeah.
Hoover's little Jew stabbed us in the back.
Yeah. I didn't think he was Jewish, as it turned out.
Garza is Jewish. Name like Felt?
Yeah. Yeah, there is that.
Garza is.
I know for a fact he wasn't on our Jew list.
He was?
Nope. I remember because you were pretty insistent.
Well, of course I was.
That I find out.
That would be the first thing you'd want to.
Yeah.
So, I mean, you're saying that he was Hoover's little Jew, and he wasn't even Jewish.
Mm-hmm. And he's about 6'2" or something.
Yeah.
I mean, even Hoover told me he wasn't Jewish when I saw him last year over at the improbable residence picnic at the.
Well, I mean, you know, if you're gonna go into the business of trusting Hoover at this late stage of the game. I mean, you know, he's probably still insisting that Clyde Tolson isn't, oh, sweetie.
Mm-hmm. Probably is.
Of course he is. No reason for him not to.
Yeah, probably true.
So, what do we know about him?
Well, he probably is. Oh, sweetie.
What do we know about this non-Drew Felt?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Sees himself as a straight arrow.
Oh, gosh.
In Hoover's mold.
Yep. Mm-hmm. Most corrupt bunch of all, of course.
Mm-hmm.
The straight arrows.
Yep.
You know. They'll sell you out for a bagel.
Yep. Even the non-Jews.
Well, yeah. Especially the non-Jews.
That's right.
Because they think you're not watching them. Of course. Why would you when there's so many.
Didn't need money.
Felt.
That's right.
Didn't need money.
That's right.
So, we couldn't have paid him off even if we'd known, you see.
Well, I kind of knew.
Well, I mean, we all knew the FBI was leaking like a sieve.
Yeah.
See, I mean, that's why we sent Matt Gray over there to clean the place up, leak back to us. So, you know, at least we'd know what the leakers knew, sort of thing.
Yep. And I think in one of the tapes I actually said that Felt was.
Well, whoever said what, you know, the Buddhists say that none of it matters.
I suppose so.
No, I know they do. I went over there.
No, I mean, I suppose it's true.
Yep.
Yep. Yep. Yep.
So, I assume we have our people out there tearing deep throat a new
throat?
Yep. Yep, that's it.
Sure, sure. Buchanan's been out. Colson, Liddy's been out. All saying he was a traitor.
Traitor, huh? Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a promising angle. Mm-hmm. Of course, the Bush people don't have the gallstones to prosecute a good old-fashioned treason case.
I don't really think there's evidence.
You know, why should they stand up for old man Nixon? You know, where they can spend their time and their energy covering up for their own guy, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, sure. Human nature.
That's right. That's right. I'm up here, and they're down there.
Yep, yep, yep.
Gersh, maybe he needs money now.
Who's that?
Felt!
Yeah. Yep.
Who the hell do you think we're talking about, Bob?
No, I...
Don't let this place make you lose your edge. Mm-hmm. See? Mm-hmm. That's what they want. It's probably why they let us in here.
Mm-hmm. Hoping we'd lose our edge.
That's right. That's right. So
does Felt need money now?
Uh-huh.
I think his family does. That's why
the FBI pension isn't worth the hell.
They kind of pushed him to admit it.
Yeah. Yeah, I think they're going to clean up, huh?
Oh, sure. Book deal.
Yeah. Yep. Movie deal.
Yeah. You'd think so.
Well, sure. You know, the truth is running all over Hollywood. This would be a sure thing for their Rat Pack unit.
You thinking we could pay him off now?
Well, I mean, of course, it would be possible, you know, through couriers and blind drops and so forth. But I understand, you know, from reading the books about Watergate and so forth. Hmm.
Now, Ulasewicz has passed, of course, but...
Well, Bagman's a dime a dozen, mm-hmm. See. Mm-hmm. But it would be wrong to pay him off, unless we could find some money to do it with, see. Then, of course,
we'd pay him to say that he wasn't deep throat, that the whole thing was made up by...
You know, a modified limited 180, yeah. The whole thing was made up by Woodward, see? Mm-hmm. Helped sell his new book,
mm-hmm.
See?
Mm-hmm.
That's why I thought Felt was Jewish. I'm just remembering now.
Yeah.
Because who else would Woodward trust, you see, but a fellow Jew?
I could work on sourcing the funds.
Mm-hmm.
Woodward's not Jewish either.
Well, of course he isn't. That's just what they want you to believe.
You should have heard Kissinger.
Of course, what we really should do is just torch the fellow's house, mm-hmm. See? Like I always wanted to do with the Brookings Institution. Mm-hmm. Just burn the place down sort of thing.
Mm-hmm.
So, Henry was out talking?
Yeah. Well, sure. Yeah. I mean, it's the only thing he loved to do more than
taking out Jill St. John.
That's right. That's right.
Yeah. Yep. Yep. Henry, He was
very good. Mm. Said you'd talk about things like burning down Brookings, but we all understood that you were just letting off steam. Mistake the Watergate guys made was thinking you meant it. That sort of approach.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
So that's what you thought I was doing back then, letting off steam.
Well, that's pretty much what all...
Because I kept wondering, you know, if we couldn't organize a simple little fire, you see, in the dead of...
No,
you
know, I know, the dead of night.
That's right. Then what the hell business did we have running a... But even at the time, obviously had to be a pretty sophisticated break-in type operation.
Yeah. No.
Did you say what I...
No, we just didn't think you...
No, that's fine. That's fine.
We thought we were protected.
No, I know. Play it as if the old man's losing it, of course.
That's right. That's right.
Yeah. Very smart.
Yeah.
Meanwhile, this whole time,
mm-hmm.
Brookings is still standing.
Well...
But, you know, that's what you wanted to achieve, of course. That's your right.
Yeah. Just focusing on the good job Henry did for us.
Yeah, well... Of course.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's not like he's Jewish, you see.
No, he is.
He is?
Mm-hmm.
All right, then. Rosemary's List is just about 100% wrong.
I can have one of the angels work on that.
Mm-hmm. Seems like the least we can do.
Yep. Yep.
Thank you.
This is Le Show.
Los Angeles Dog Trainer Corrections for you.
With a Dog Trainer Corrections for you. A listener asked, I can't find that newspaper anywhere. Seriously, somebody emailed me and said, I Googled to try to find the Los Angeles Dog Trainer. An article in the May 20th calendar section about a series of pre-censorship-era movies at UCLA said the Motion Picture Production Code was established and Will Hayes hired to enforce it subsequent to the 1930-34 pre-code era. In fact, Hayes was hired in 1922 to run the movie industries, producers, and distributors of America, which created the production code in 1930. The code wasn't put into strict effect until July 1, 1934, when Joseph Breen was the official enforcer. So they got it almost all wrong. The Popeye column in Sunday's calendar section referred to Don Iyener as the president and chief executive of Columbia Records. He is president and chief executive of Sony Music U.S. The column also gave the title of the song Black Roses Red as Black Red Roses. An article in Sports about the selection of Hans Westerhoff as the new coach of soccer team Chivas USA misspelled his last name, and the article said he was in his 60s. He is 56. The obituary of actor Eddie Albert referred to the Museum of Television and Radio in New York City as the Museum of Radio and Television. Anybody could do that. An article in Monday's Section A about a British man's effort to ensure life-sustaining treatment for himself misspelled the first name of the late Terry Schiavo as T-E-R-R-Y. Well, that's understandable. She didn't get a lot of attention recently. The Media Matters column in Sunday's calendar section said Kenneth Tomlinson, chairman of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, wanted to replace the current president and chief executive of PBS, Pat Mitchell. It should have said Tomlinson wanted to find a successor for Kathleen Cox as president of the Corporation of Public Broadcasting. An article in Sunday's calendar section said the TV show Starting Over was nearing the end of its third season in syndication. In fact, the show is nearing the end of its second season. A review of pianist composer Billy Childs in Saturday's calendar section reviewed to a performance of his commissioned work, Voices of Angels, by the Los Angeles Master Chorale and Los Angeles Philharmonic. In fact, the piece was commissioned and performed by the chorale, not the orchestra. An article in Monday's health section about people who run and hike on bare feet said Vin Lenana is director of track and field at Stanford University. Although he formerly held that position, he's been director of athletics and phys ed at Oberlin College for almost 2 years. An article in Saturday's calendar section about Los Angeles Mayor-elect Antonio Villaraigosa said the Getty House, the official residence of the mayor of Los Angeles, was in Hancock Park. In fact, the Getty House is in the Windsor Square neighborhood of Los Angeles. A photo caption in Monday's Section A with an article about teams that play baseball, according to the rules and customs of the 19th century, identified the player shown Gary Pops Cooper as Mike Ballin. An article in Thursday's Sports Section about boys' championship tennis match said Jason Choi won 2 of 3 single sets. Choi lost his 3 single sets. The scoreboard results of the match said Troy's Lawrence Wang lost to Choi 6-1. Wang defeated Choi 6-0. These results also said that Wang defeated Louis Hong 6-1. The score of that match was 6-3. Finally, the results said Troy's Vim Mahader defeated Sunny Hills Hong 6-0. Mahader lost to Hong 6-0. An article in Friday's calendar section said that in the fall, the George Lopez show would move to 8:30 p.m. Tuesday. ABC has scheduled it for 8 p.m. Wednesday next season. An article in Friday's Section A about the indictment of public relations consultant Douglas Dowie referred to Deborah Wong Yang, the U.S. Attorney for the Central District of California, as Deborah Wang. An article in Friday's Section A about a study of shrinking Arctic lakes described Professor Lawrence C. Smith is an associate professor of geology at UCLA. He is an associate professor of geography. And finally, the obituary of Josephine Clay Ford in Thursday's California section said Henry Ford's son, Edsel Ford, nearly bankrupted the family car-making business in the 1950s. Edsel Ford died in 1943. Los Angeles dog trainer apologies. Oh, no, there is one more. Can't resist this. A review of The Longest Yard in Friday's calendar
Why
section.
Did I
well, that's a mistake. That's a serious mistake. There should be music somewhere. Maybe there's not. Maybe I'll finish this whole segment without music. A review of The Longest Yard in Friday's calendar section referred to the corrections officers in the original film Longest Yard as being masochistic. It should have described them as sadistic. Los Angeles dog trainer corrections, ladies and gentlemen. For you. There we go. That concludes this edition of the show. The program returns next week at the same time over these same stations. And it would be just like getting the guards' perversion correct, if you'd agree to join with me then. Would you already? Thank you very much. Uh-huh. The email address for this broadcast is lemail, L-E-M-A-I-L, at interworld.net. Le Show Internet Services by Steve Mack. A tip of the Le Show chapeau to the San Diego, Chicago, and Pittsburgh desks. The show comes to you from Century of Progress Productions and originates through the facilities of KCRW Santa Monica, a community recognized around the world as the home of the homeless.